I think we can get started. Apologies on behalf of the 5th Legislative District for how much road work there is in this district right now. And apologies also that it's further investing in fossil fuels. That is the road work it is to invest further in fossil fuels, which is disappointing. But with that, I will call the April 3rd, 2023 meeting of the Health, Human Services, and Housing Committee to order. Recording and everything?
Mm-hmm.
Excellent. And I'll begin with entertaining a motion to approve the March 1st, 2023.
Do we do a roll call?
Do we have to do a roll call? No.
No,
we don't do a roll call usually.
We can. I'm happy to.
No, we don't usually do a roll call.
Okay.
You have the roll call.
We all know who's here.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right, so I will
make a motion to approve the minutes of the previous meeting whose date you were about to
March 1st, 2023.
I will second.
Thank you so much. Is there any discussion on the March 1st minutes? All right, all those in favor of approving the March 1st minutes, say aye.
Aye.
Anyone else that opposes it, say nay. All right, that is unanimous. Between the last meeting and now, there were a couple of conversations about having guests at this meeting. One was potentially having the Executive Director of Family of Woodstock come and speak. And there was another was the, what is it called, the Substance Prevention Council. Because of the scheduling change to account for the Pesach holiday, and the fact that we have a meeting right after this, we decided to not do that. We also have a very heavy agenda. So we decided to forego those since they weren't time sensitive. So those will happen at the May meeting. So we're going to get right into resolutions today. We do have one piece of new business at the end that's not a presentation. It's a discussion that is timely, and I thought that it would be important to have it, and it was something that Legislator Erner suggested. So we'll get to that when we come to it. We'll begin with resolutions. We're starting with resolutions for whom there is a department head that only has one resolution. There's a couple department heads that only need to be here for one resolution, and I thought they would appreciate it, and our Deputy Clerk Jay thought they would appreciate it if we put those first so that they don't have to hang out for the whole long meeting. So, beginning... Yes, you're very welcome. We're going to begin with resolution number 145, confirming appointment of members to the Ulster County Youth Board. May I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
Moved by Nolan. Can I have a second? Second by Erner. I don't think Director Dawson is here. If there's any discussion on the committee or any questions, we can have that discussion. Anyone have anything? All right, if there's no discussion or questions, I'll call the question. All those in favor of resolution number 145, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that's unanimous. Resolution number 175, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $13,000, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county with Family Home Health Care for the Office for the Aging. Can I have a motion to discuss? Thank you so much. In a second. Second from Erner. All right. Director Copenhaver, I will defer to you for just a brief overview of the program.
The Family Health Center is one of our contracts, and we are fortunate to know that they spent more than we budgeted for the last year, and that's the reason for the addition, which means they're supplying us with more aid and we're getting more people off the wait list. So if you want a nice, simple explanation, it's not a lot of money, and it's included in the budget, but we do need to increase that amount to accommodate what happened. So it's a good thing.
Great. Any questions? Yeah.
With the programs, I'm finding, because I'm referring people, that they have to be Medicaid eligible. Is that with this program and most of your programs, too?
We don't usually take care of folks who are Medicaid eligible. Unless, you know, with this whole change with the Medicaid cap, we are continuing to take care of folks who previously were not eligible for Medicaid, but now we're going to continue them until we're told otherwise. But it's not typically something that we do.
So it's not a requirement that they be on Medicaid before they get any of the programs?
No, we don't usually care for folks on Medicaid at all, for the most part. So Medicaid has its own set of contracts with home care agencies through the MLTCs, because most of the folks will be eligible for an MLTC, and that's a separate funding stream, and that's apart and separate from what we do.
Okay. I'll get in touch with you later then.
Sure.
Thank you.
Any other questions or points of discussion? I'll just take the opportunity to ask, do we have a sense of how the wait list, what it looks like now?
Yeah.
Well, it's now a little over 500 when it was over 800.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, it's good to have that progress.
Our new case manager, one of the two physicians, started today and had a little trouble trying to come in. One of the folks who we wanted to hire as a home care, we had two on the books, got sick and has been sick, but we got another one in, and she's doing great. She filled right up, and the new case manager, just like I said, just started today, and she'll start training and start taking more folks off the waiting list. The issue, however, is that there was not a requisite amount put in the budget for the services like the PERS units and the meals being the most expensive part of this. So you understand that we have to restrict how many people we do every month from the wait list because there's just not enough in the budget. I had talked about that when Eve was the...
Yeah, when we were doing the budget last year, yeah.
Just want to make sure that's on the record.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yep.
I just had a quick question. What is the starting salary of a home health aide in your department?
Well, we hire homemaker aides, and it's $18.20 an hour.
Okay, thank you.
It's a nice salary, benefits, paid time off, a lot more than they get from the home health aide.
I was going to say that's a lot more than I expected. Right.
All right, any other questions or discussion? All right, with that, I'll call the question on Resolution 175. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that's unanimous. Before we go on to the next resolution, I'll just say to Director Dawson, we did your resolution first. I put them at the beginning of the agenda because you and a few other department heads only had one resolution, so I wanted to didn't want to make you wait for the whole meeting.
Thank you.
It was approved.
Thank
it was approved
you.
Unanimously. If there's anything you want to say about it, though, you can have like 60 seconds to say something.
I appreciate it. They're great kids. One of them, Kyle Fahala. They're a great kid from Mondo Valley High School. Amazing. They're like 30-year-olds in a kid's body. They're amazing. That's it.
Awesome.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
All right. Moving right along, Resolution Number 176, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $30,000, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000 entered into by the county with Pitangaro and Deutsch Consulting Engineers, PC, Veterans Services Agency. Can I have a motion to discuss?
I'll move it.
And may I have a second? All right, second, we'll go to Pete on the second. All right, and Director Cozzopoli, if you want to give us a
sure
background.
So this is for the Veterans Cemetery. They're our consultants. This money's already been allocated in the capital budget, but for some reason, since we have the original contract with them, they wanted us to pay through our contract, so just needed the resolution to get approved so the money can be moved from one to the other and paid. But it's not additional funding. There are money that's out there, been approved, been allocated. So it's just a matter of just checking off a couple boxes to make sure it's done correctly.
Okay. And what is this funding for specifically?
So they are our consultants with the Veterans Cemetery design and then also during the construction process. So they're there. They're on site. They're helping the contractor make decisions and ensure that it's built to specifications as supposed to be, and if there are any issues, they're supposed to provide us with information, updates, and recommendations on how to move forward.
And what stage of the project are we?
We're almost there. So if I have a minute.
Yeah, please.
Left.
That's what we're doing.
So we're almost there. It's going to be complete sometime next month. We do have a meeting in about a week or two. Landscaping is going to be the last step, so we have to just get over a couple of hurdles there with just some of the seeding. The trees have been planted. We got to make sure that the bushes come through. But for the most part, it's finished. And it's looking great if you haven't had a chance to see it. It's on Plains Road, New Paltz Rural Cemetery. And the flagpoles actually just went up, which is
that's a great moment.
So you'll be all getting an invite. We're going to make sure that, obviously, the legislature is there for when we have the opening. Don't know exactly when it's going to be yet. sometime in the early spring. So we're looking at mid-May into early June. Memorial Day is around that time frame. You know, people would think maybe we want to do it on that day, but there's so much happening that day all over. And me, as the Veteran Services, I'll tell you, me, I want to stay off of Memorial Day with this because that's a specific day for those killed in action. Even though this is a cemetery and it kind of makes sense, it actually doesn't to the veteran population. Looking to do that, and I'll be getting with the County Executive's Office soon to discuss, you know, potential dates and really what works for everybody. The old section is almost at capacity, so this really did time out right. We are under budget. We cut out quite a bit to try to get it well down, but as you know, with contractors and things just not being ready or something else has to be finished the right way and materials not working, we still remained under budget, so very happy about that. That was one of the promises we made, you know, because it was such a high bid, and we weren't happy about that either.
Let's make sure the under budget thing gets discussed at Ways and Means as well. Yeah.
So we're there right now, and we're close to the finish line, so we should remain under budget.
Great.
Yes, sir.
This might be a question for you or for Planner Doyle, but the local concerns I mostly read about in the paper, have those all been resolved?
Yes, so I can speak to that. We did have a follow-up meeting with the town, and the town, specifically the Plains Road residents. They had some major concerns from the lighting. So if you're not all aware, there was some very strong lighting put in through our contractors, and it was really what was in the contract, but it wasn't what was appropriate, and it wasn't what was necessary. Very high beams, and they were all left on one night after construction went home. And if you would have seen it, all shining, one spot on a building, high beams, it really looked terrible. And it was something that concerned them extremely. They were very, very adamant, though, that they wanted no light after seeing something like that. And that was such a complete drastic change to, well, we're going to promise to not try to, you know, disrupt the peacefulness of this area. However, we have the American flag. It's not something we can, it makes sense to have someone raise it and lower it every day in perpetuity and all kinds of weather, and really no one was able to commit to that as they had wanted. So we came to a very good compromise
we worked to find a solar solution. So
we
things happened. One is that the lighting levels went down, and two is the lighting is now provided by solar.
But they're extremely happy with the fact that we were not only that we came up with the solution, but we were very responsive. As soon as we understood that they were upset, and they were rightfully so, we heard them out, we listened, we removed the lighting. They're going to be repurposed around the county and on other buildings and where it should be better utilized. And they were willing to listen to why we needed to fly that American flag and it needed to be lit through the night. And I think all parties were happy at the last meeting we had because they were heard, we did what we need to do. And we're happy that we're going to have the flag flying and it's going to remain lit.
Okay,
great. Any other questions or discussions?
I just have a comment.
Yeah,
just thank you for changing that date, because every Memorial Day, the commander in Esopus pulls me aside and goes, you know, we always...
yeah,
so, yeah, I'm glad that you were thinking about the other...
You
get pulled aside too? Okay, good.
ALF.
But so he'll be thrilled to hear that.
Great. Perfect. Awesome. And before we call the question, I just want to clarify, when I said I want the cost savings to be discussed, I meant I want it to be celebrated at Ways and Means.
No, I understood.
Because those guys deserve that experience of celebrating cost savings.
Anyway,
with that, call the question on 176. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that's unanimous. Resolution number 165. And those who just had their only budget or their only resolution, no offense if you want to leave. That is the reason we put this early in the agenda. So. Yes, exactly. Resolution number 165, amending the 2023 Ulster County budget to accept additional funding from the New York State Office for Mental Health for the Dwyer Veteran Peer-to-Peer Support Program, Department of Mental Health. Can I have a motion to discuss?
I'd like to.
Motion from Legislator Nolan. May I have a second?
Second.
Second from Legislator Stewart. Director McDonald, if you want to give us an overview on the funding here.
Sure. So we actually
actually the majority of these resolutions are a result of additions to our state aid letters that we're getting from the Office of Mental Health or the Office of Addiction and Support Services. So that I'll do that sort of preamble for the majority of them. This is a service that we began to give in 2020, I believe it was when it was first funded. But every year when it comes through, the program has to continue and sustain without having the funding follow it. It was the same thing for this year. We're just now getting the funding, though the program has been continuous for the past 2 years.
Any questions from the committee?
I'd just make the comment that these peer-to-peer programs have been shown to have a great deal of efficacy, and they're very much appreciated. So really happy to have this funding being put in place, and especially for the veterans.
Fantastic.
I will say that our providers actually are, on a statewide level, very much involved in the statewide rollout based on the work that's being done here in Ulster County. So that's quite exciting and something a feather in our cap.
That's great. Something to be proud of.
And I just want to echo Legislator Nolan's comments.
Awesome. Well, on that high note, maybe we can call the question on resolution number 165. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 165 is unanimous. And now we are back at the top of the regular agenda. Thanks so much, Mark. Resolution number 97, supporting the reintroduction of the National Plan to End Parkinson's Act and proclaiming April 2023 as Parkinson's Awareness Month in Ulster County. May I have a motion to discuss?
Motion.
Yeah, moved by Petit. May I have a second?
Second.
Second by Nolan. And I will defer to our Deputy Chair, Lopez, to give some background on this.
Sure. We discussed it during our last month's meeting, but this was originally introduced in the last Congress, and it didn't get voted on, so it has to be reintroduced with new sponsors. I had reached out to both Congressman Ryan and Congressman Molinaro. Both had showed interest in carrying this. It basically creates an advisory council that consists of federal agencies and non-federal stakeholders working together to for research, raising funds, and working directly and indirectly with caregivers ultimately, and Parkinson's disease. So I thought it'd just be a good opportunity, to use our memorializing resolutions, since I'm not always a big fan of them, but I think this is pretty important, and it could actually make a difference.
Great, thank you. Anyone have any other comments, questions, or discussion? All right, well then with that, we will call the question on resolution 97. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 97 is unanimous. Resolution number 125, adopting proposed local law number 2 of 2023, a local law designating affordable housing as an Ulster County public purpose. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
And a second.
Second.
Petite. All right. And then because this is my legislation, if it's all right, I'm going to make the first attempt to kind of frame things here. So we had a public hearing last month. We heard a lot of feedback from the public, which I thought was really powerful, and I'm glad that everyone had the chance to hear that, particularly that people that are directly impacted came to share with us. So this is the final step in creating the establishment of housing as a county, as a public purpose. There is a very, very, very minor amendment that was suggested by one of the members of the public that seemed very reasonable, which is to make sure that we're also including the additional definition of extremely low and very low income housing, in addition to the low and moderate income housing. My personal feeling was that, low or moderate, low income housing implies that you're also accommodating programs for extremely low and very low, but it doesn't hurt to explain that. And so I did also confirm from council that making this edit does not require us to go back to another public hearing. So we can make this addition of four words, basically. So with that, if anyone has any questions or points of discussion, and at some point I will need to entertain a motion to make the amendment. Or I think we can just do adopt it as presented, right? Okay, then never mind. Legislator Nolan.
I agree with making extremely low and very low explicit, and was prepared to make the amendment, but since we don't need it, I am happy with the text as presented.
Any other questions or points of discussion? Legislator Erner?
There was another comment from the public about means testing and a way to clarify that we should be open to the possibility that someone can't prove that what their income is necessarily by, that is to say, they might not actually be in a state or federal program that says that they're of such and such income. Did we have a way to, and they thought that the person saying that, who was the deputy mayor of the village of New Paltz, said that would, that could be accomplished in their opinion by adding a comma and an and somewhere, but I didn't have the exact place where they recommended that.
Yeah, I remember that, and I think the way that Legislator Erner has presented it is helpful, because I do think we need to have a mechanism by which we determine that a person is eligible, counts, as it were, for the purposes of this legislation. But the way this reads, it says, deemed to be in one of these categories by any state or federal housing program. And it is, to me, it would be satisfactory to say that they would be eligible by the criteria of any state or federal housing program, which would capture those people who have not gone to a state or a federal program and had an application reviewed in order to be deemed by. So I think it's a technical point, but it could end up making a difference of whether somebody who's never applied for state or federal housing could come to be, I'm not sure exactly how they would come under this law, but I think that was the point that the comment from the public commenter was making. And it may not be critical, because this is just saying that we consider anyone in these categories we want our affordable housing as a public purpose to include all those people. And this isn't, we're not actually doing any awarding of fund monies through this law. It's just defining the category. So I can see where we might not need to change it, but I think it is a pretty simple thing to change on the fly to have it state what we mean. So I would just add the words after extremely low, very low, low, or right before that, those words, extremely low, I would say for persons or families eligible or deemed to be of extremely low, low, et cetera. And Director Doyle.
Yeah, let's go to Director Doyle.
Yeah, and my apologies. We sort of added this into the original definition when Legislator Uchitel reached out to us, and we thought that the way this is written is expansive, not restrictive. So you don't have to essentially be going through any of the application processes. And what it does is it allows, as or if the federal government changes its eligibility requirements, the local law would follow those changes in eligibility requirements by basically saying is you could go into those requirements and say, yes, you would be eligible for this, and then as such, you would be eligible for the funding under this program. So we wrote it thinking that it was expansive if the legislature doesn't believe that that's the case, but that's one of the reasons we asked for it to be deemed to be eligible an expansion of the definition of affordable housing, not as a restriction.
If I may, I deeply appreciate the conversation around means testing, and my experience with it is that rarely will you have someone who needs the help but isn't actually in one of these categories. The situation that the reason it's important to really question the utility of means testing is because you'll find people that are in one of these categories but cannot prove it and doesn't have the right paperwork, doesn't know where their birth certificate is, doesn't know something like this, which is something that people experiencing poverty tend to also experience. So my read on this is that it wouldn't preclude us from helping those individuals, and that this is not instituting some sort of means testing criteria into our housing programs. That said, I'm open to the amendment. Legislator Nolan.
So the following sentence does clarify that, quote here, nothing in the definition shall prevent the county from funding housing services either above or below this affordability level, and so on, ending the quote. Still, I think, and I see the place that it would go would be after deemed, would be the word, would be five words, or eligible to be deemed to be of. And the reason I suggest we go ahead and make that amendment is that the public did comment that it felt to them that they had to be deemed somehow. So why don't we clarify that we're just trying to catch everybody?
Right. I'm open to that. What I'd like then is, I suppose just to make it clean, if we could have an amendment right now and someone could read both the language, Legislator Nolan, that you just mentioned, or eligible to be deemed, and then also read the extremely low, very low language so that we can make the amendment and then adopt as amended. So I'll entertain that motion.
Okay, I move that we amend what we have presented before us to read as follows in part under Section 2C. Affordable housing shall be generally defined as housing on which the occupant is paying no more than 30% of gross income for housing costs, including utilities, for persons or families deemed to be or eligible to be deemed of extremely low, very low, low or moderate income by any state or federal housing program.
Can I have a second?
Second.
All right. All those in favor of the amendment? Or, sorry, any discussion on the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Any discussion on the amended law? All those in favor of the amended law?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. The resolution is approved as amended. Thank you. Resolution number 126, dedicating funding to housing justice.
I'll move it.
Thank you so much. Can I have a second? Second from Legislator Erner. And again, another one of mine, so I'll give the framing for this. Those of you who were on this committee last year will remember that I introduced legislation to allocate money from excess fund balance to basically create a line item for funding for housing programs. It doesn't circumvent the legislative process. Everything still has to go through the legislative process. We ran into some headwinds around the changes to the fund balance policy that made it a little bit more complicated. So this is basically the same resolution, but without making changes to the fund balance policy. At that time, I had been attempting to create an automatic mechanism to fill up this pot whenever there's certain criteria around fund balance excesses. What I'm hoping to do here is to not just let go of that automatic mechanism for now and to have this one-time allocation. And I want this allocation, there will be an example in the next resolution that we're going to see after this tonight. I want this allocation to be on the table and to be made formally so that we know that there's money dedicated to housing and that we are encouraged to bring forward programs to deal with the housing crisis. I believe that by dedicating the funding, we will create an environment where we more aggressively bring forward programs to address these issues. And with that, I would love to entertain any questions, comments, or discussion. Oh, and I should have added one other thing. And then we'll go to Legislator Erner, and this is important. I did speak with the county executive today. And we had a great conversation about housing and the way that this funding could be used. And I do believe that there's, although I sounded very bullish a moment ago, I now recall and remind myself that this is a slow process where it's important to be on the same page together, and I think it's important also for us to get feedback from their office on this type of resolution, and also to really kind of have more substance to their recommendation from the county executive's office from what we heard in the State of the County address, where they were asking for an allocation of funding. So after some thought and discussion with the county executive, my recommendation is that we postpone this 1 month. I say this for a couple of reasons. One, I think we're still going to hear feedback from the county executive and their team, who are working very hard on this. And two, I want that feedback to, while it pains me to postpone it, I want that feedback and our reaction to that feedback to happen in this committee. I don't want to leave that for Ways and Means. And for that reason, I want to hold it in this committee rather than send it to Ways and Means. So, Legislator Erner, go ahead.
Thanks. All right, processing that.
I know, I'm sorry. This is evolving as the day goes on, which I think is further reason why it's not necessary to be hasty.
But I'm happy to see the number back where we were in the budget talks last year, and I have a technical amendment to suggest in the kind of the middle resolved on page 2. It says, resolve the Ulster County Commissioner of shall account, and I believe we need to say which commissioner there.
Oh, yeah. If we make that amendment, but we don't, but then we postpone it, that amendment then is there the next time we come around. So, Phil, if you want to make that as a formal amendment.
I'll move that we insert, is it the Commissioner of Finance?
I believe that's right.
Okay,
yes.
Finance.
I'll second.
Great. Any discussion on the amendment? The typo, basically.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'll call the question on the amendment. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? Great, thank you. All right, now further discussion on the fund allocation. Director Doyle.
Thank you. And I just wanted to thank Legislator Ustel for recommending the postponement. I know that the county executive had that conversation, and we're working, it shows a new cooperation between the legislature and the executive to work these issues out. And when there's this kind of money at stake, we want to sort of make sure that we're all on the same page when it goes forward. Really appreciate Legislator Ustel offering the suggestion that we postpone this.
Thank you. Legislator Nolan.
I support the resolution, and I support the postponement for the reasons stated.
Anyone else?
Yep.
Legislator Tate.
Yeah, I support the resolution as well, but it says it will be going into a fund balance. Has there been any discussion about putting more clarification into it? So it doesn't, I don't know.
So if I may answer that,
yeah.
That's kind of why that's one of the things I'm hoping will come out as we,
okay.
One of the things that we're exploring here, and we'll see it in the next resolution, is the degree to which the legislature dictates policy. And it is absolutely our prerogative to dictate policy and to appropriate policies. This is very much in our wheelhouse. But we're not the ones that are actually executing it. And it's very important to make sure that we know how this is, you know, how they're going to be approaching it. We're not even the ones that account for it financially, although according to the charter, the finance commissioner does report to the legislature in addition to the reporting to the executive. So, you know, you could make the argument that this is all within our purview, but I believe I hear from many people in our body that there is a desire for a little bit more clarification, and I think that we'll see that in two ways. Number one, we'll see the ways in which the money could be accessed through the legislative process, which is one of the things I'm trying to set off in the next resolution, and then number two, once we hear more clarification from the county executive on some of the housing policies that we might spend this money on, I think we'll feel more comfortable. So I hope that we can achieve the level of clarity you're describing. Any other questions or points of discussion? All right. So with that, I'll entertain a motion to postpone 1 month.
Oh, make the motion.
Thank you, Legislator Nolan.
Second.
All right. All those in favor of postponing this resolution 1 month, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. So 126 is postponed 1 month. Resolution number 127, establishing a policy to prioritize feeding Ulster County residents living in emergency housing. May I have a motion to discuss?
Move it.
Moved by Nolan, second by Petit. And again, this is my last resolution tonight, I promise. but I want to give a little bit of a background here. So, as everyone here probably knows, during the pandemic, a number of philanthropic organizations stepped up to accommodate some pretty dire crises that were happening in our community. And I think one of the things that we saw during the pandemic is that some of these crises existed before the pandemic, and they still exist after the pandemic. One of those programs was a program that I've actually been volunteering for called the Kingston Emergency Food Collaborative. And they have been making food deliveries to any family in need every day of the week with food that's prepared at the Hodge Center in Kingston. And they are funded by private philanthropy. And some of the people that they have been feeding are people that are in emergency housing and have been placed in emergency housing by DSS. And a lot of these folks are in hotels. And, you know, emergency housing will often be in the form of a shelter, but in some cases it'll be in the form of a hotel. These hotels don't have kitchens, they don't have full refrigerators, they don't prepare meals the way that a shelter would. And these are basically folks that the county is responsible for. And my personal philosophy is that we cannot rely on the private sector to indefinitely fulfill the responsibilities of the public sector. And so while I'm not advocating that the county take over, feeding every family by delivering food to them in the county, the folks that are in emergency housing that DSS has a relationship with, I believe we can treat them with dignity and we can feed them. And I think that's a meaningful, even if it's just one meal, I think it's a really meaningful step that we can take. And so this is to set in motion an RFP to see what agencies might be able to respond. My hope is that Kingston Emergency Food Collaborative will be one of the respondents. I also think about Gateway, which provides the senior meals program, and there might be other vendors that might be interested in responding as well. So this sets in motion the RFP. The language in the resolve clauses that dictate the process of the RFP, this is the same language that we saw 1 month ago when we set in motion an RFP for mental health services. So there is a precedent for this type of language to be used in terms of dictating how an RFP will unfold and in terms of the relationship between the legislature and the county executive. So with that, I will open the floor to any questions, comments, or concerns. Legislator Nolan.
One is just a simple thing, but the language of prioritizing feeding, it doesn't work well for me. In a hospital setting, to feed somebody, it has a different kind of connotation. So I would like us to think maybe in terms of food security, prioritizing food security or nutritional stability.
Mm-hmm.
I think that it gives a kind of more expansive notion to what we're doing. And related to that, I'm not sure that it's excluded, but you mentioned the absence of refrigerators, devices to heat food in many of the locales or hotels where we might find emergency housing. And so I would wonder if there's room to think about ways that the county could make those kinds of amenities available for families that are or individuals who are in need of emergency housing, and also that we be expansive in terms of whether food delivery is always the answer. There may be things like a shopping cart or something that would supplement the SNAP program benefits that might be equally or more beneficial and perhaps more efficient. So I couldn't find a place where I thought that this resolution narrowed it down other than in the title. So if we can amend the title, then I think, which I think is just a ministerial amendment in this case, then I think that the resolution itself allows for the kind of possibilities coming from the consultant and perhaps being included in the RFP.
I appreciate that. And I can just change the title. Do I need an amendment to change the title, or is that?
You should amend it.
Should amend it. Okay. As you were saying that, I was thinking that we would just replace the word feeding with meals. So we have prioritized meals for Ulster County residents. because I don't want to, like, we're not taking over their entire nutritional needs, and we're not solving their food insecurity problems. We're providing them meals.
It wouldn't cover the notion that somebody might get a shopping cart.
Oh, well, I actually have some concerns about that. I didn't realize that the amendment was meant to address both. If we were to give them a shopping cart, first of all, they don't have transportation. Second of all, which is a different issue, but it's a big issue. And second of all, in fact, part of the reason why I'm passionate about this is if we can save them one less trip walking down 28 to the Quick Check, we might save their life. So that's part of the reason why I'm passionate about bringing food to them. And second of all, if we're doing something that has a very clear monetary value, there might be benefits cliff issues that we come into. This was one of the issues that came up with universal basic income. There were some people that couldn't accept the benefit because it would have pushed them off the cliff.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think that these folks might be in that position, but that's my bias.
Well, the experience I have is with only a sector of the people who are getting emergency housing. But although very few of them would have their own transportation, that sector, we do have transportation provided to people. So I guess I'm just still not sure that we've done that really full look at how the need presents and what the best solution for it is. I don't know if Commissioner Iacocci has something that add on this, but I think that conceptualizing it, that if we deliver meals, I understand that conceptualization because that's what we're doing and that's helping.
Yeah.
But that's to that. What percentage of the people who are needing emergency housing are getting served by this program, and is this the best way to do it? I guess I just feel like that. We're coming to that conclusion more quickly than I feel I've got the experience or data to evaluate.
Yeah. Legislator Erner and then Stewart.
Yeah, I mean, my take on this is we're just committing to, we're taking on providing some food to people that they can eat in their emergency housing. That's what I see this saying and directing the executive branch to do, however they see fit through DSS, for example, and the needs that you're aware of. I guess I'm excited to go ahead with this right away, as it is.
Legislator Stewart.
I was just going to say that one advantage of actually delivering meals as opposed to giving a card is that there's at least some way that the county can guarantee that the food that's being presented to them is of a sufficient nutritional value.
Mm-hmm.
That way we know, they're getting their vegetables and whatever, as opposed to going out and spending money on, Cheetos and ice cream. So that's a concern. That
I'll just point out in response to that, and then we'll go to Legislator Petit, who's on the committee, and then Hewitt, and then we'll pull in Commissioner Iacocci. The details, this is setting in motion the beginning of an RFP. The county executive has a significant amount of time to actually execute sending the RFP out, and then there's a significant amount of time to wait for the responses, and there's a significant amount of time for we could be 6 months away from the program, or seven if we postpone tonight. The resolution does stipulate that we have a seat on the RFP kind of drafting process, and so if we wanted to include something like that, like for example, one thing I want to stipulate is that respondents will have to provide food that is culturally appropriate. So if they, something like one thing I know there's been an issue is like if you deliver quinoa to people they've never seen quinoa before, that is not going to go over well, which did result in a lot of extra quinoa at the Kingston Murray's Food Collaborative one time. So, and so that these are the types of things that I think we can include.
I don't blame them. I can't stand it.
Okay, all right. So let's go to Legislator Petit and then Hewitt.
Okay, I am in favor of this resolution. I'd love to see it do more. I also was part of Project Resilience. I still deliver food, two or three times a month from a pantry to seniors who can't get out. And Esopus is essentially a food desert. We've got a couple of gas stations and a Dollar General, but you don't really get fresh anything. I think I would like to see, though, we also have two boarding houses. And part of the condition with the boarding house is they check off, is it box number 4? And then they do not get food stamps because they're supposed to be provided with meals, but if they miss their meal, they don't have access to a refrigerator either. And your organization that you volunteer for does deliver to the Hummel House.
Yeah, and the boarding houses, unfortunately, cannot count as emergency housing. None of the people that would be covered by here would be in boarding houses because literally boarding houses aren't allowed to be emergency housing.
And it can't be considered in this resolution?
No, boarding houses can't. Unless we make this bigger than emergency housing, boarding houses cannot be emergency housing. I looked into this heavily in my first term.
Okay.
Yeah, it's very crappy, frankly, that boarding houses can't be emergency housing.
Yeah, or the people can't get food stamps.
So let's go to Legislator Hewitt.
We thought the quinoa was wonderful because it was all donated to Tilda's Kitchen.
There you go.
We turned it into high-protein black bean cheddar fries with quinoa in it. It was hidden. I think the benefits cliff would not be affected because the meals are simply available and no value is assigned to an individual.
Right, and I agree with that, but I was saying if we switch to giving them a card that was like a $100 prepaid card, that would potentially make it complicated. Legislator Nolan. And then I do want to pull in Commissioner Iaposi.
Sorry that I named you if you didn't want to speak on this issue, but I guess this resolution kind of comes fully formed rather than having kind of been discussed. And so I find myself resistant to the notion that it's just meals and not some broader nutritional stability or food security. A friend of mine wrote a cookbook for hot plate cooking and was used in New York City by people who were homeless and able to cook their meals. And so the idea that you just deliver a meal, it is a solution, and it may be the solution that a lot of people want, but if we're doing an RFP to address this problem, I guess I would like us to think about it in a broader way than just meals. So I was supported as is, but it does feel to me like less problem-solving by us as a committee will go on by the desire now that we see it in front of us to pass it because it does look good. And so if we do this good thing, are we foregoing a better thing? I take some solace in the fact that it's for an RFP, and so maybe some of these considerations will get into that, into the mix at that level. And I think meals is better than feeding.
Well, if we do decide to postpone, I can promise you that it'll come back next month with whatever fixes we can figure out. But Legislator Erner.
Just directly to respond to Legislator Nolan through comments, I do appreciate where Legislator Nolan's coming from, and I think, I mean, if we're going to go bigger, like having a county emergency housing facility that isn't hotels and motels could enable us to provide such things as well.
Commissioner Iaposi, would you like to share any comments on this topic?
My initial reaction is just to at least consider this more around one meal a day, sort of similar to Meals on Wheels, and it would be something that's not means-tested or has eligibility criteria per se, because it would be at least this stage of the process contemplated to be fully funded by the county and optional for clients who are in emergency housing and motels. They may opt not to want to have someone coming to their placement every day to drop off a meal. They may decide that they would prefer to use their cash allowance for meals and SNAP benefits to continue to have discretion over what is really a routine life skill. All of the motels that we use have mini fridges and microwave ovens. If they do not have those, we can pay for them to be installed in the room. So I think, as you said, Chair Duchatel, there's always been some degree of need around this pre-pandemic, post-pandemic, actually for decades. For anyone who's placed in emergency housing in a motel, we've always tried to ensure that basic needs are accommodated. Shelter, food is the next basic need. And systems that are in place around the kind of benefits that are available, I think it's wonderful to pursue the possibility around, one meal per day that could be dropped off to our clients that are in motels if they opt to want to receive that meal, giving them the flexibility around choosing to or not to. I know there might be more related food security needs, and perhaps we can obviously try to identify those in connection with some other initiatives. But I think for the purposes of what's being proposed here, to try to at least supplement what's already provided and to do it in a way that's consistent in terms of every day. That one meal that those individuals and families could count on, I think would be helpful. And if the county is prepared, to fund a program of that nature, I think it's a wonderful way, again, to supplement their needs.
Thank you. Any other discussion from the committee? I would entertain a motion to amend this to replace feeding with meals for in the title. Someone wants to?
I'll make that motion to replace in the title of Resolution 127. Nope, that's not it. We're on 128.
I think you can just say as,
I don't have to say the whole thing. Okay.
You don't have to say the whole thing because I said it, and you can just say so moved.
What you said.
Yeah. is there a second for that amendment, that motion? Yep, second from Legislator Corcoran. Any discussion on the amendment? Legislator Nolan?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm just realizing that I actually am the voluntary, non-paid president of an organization that now provides emergency housing in Ulster County, so I'm going to need to recuse myself from further discussion on this and voting on the motion in front of us and the resolution.
But this wouldn't really be a benefit that your organization receives.
It would probably not, but we're going to have a conversation later about how our current ethics board views this, and I think in light of the concerns that are being raised, that I think I should, having recognized this, just out of an abundance of caution, recuse myself.
Okay. Director Doyle?
Just a comment on the resolve, which basically says, whereas the RFP document being public, the document in fact is not public until it's issued, and so having the way this is currently written creates some problems with respect to making sure that people don't think that the document is public until it's issued. It doesn't mean you can write the other work into that, but it shouldn't. I have some concerns with respect to the idea that the document's public. It is public.
This says prior to being public.
Oh, I'm sorry. I apologize.
That's okay.
That's fine. And then the other question I would ask is that there's always some concern when the legislature basically directs a member of the county executive staff to do something directly rather than requesting it be done. There's some concern with respect to that.
It's all a work in progress. Any other discussion? I'm curious to kind of just informally hear the will of the committee to proceed with this tonight, or if folks are more comfortable. I'm seeing thumbs up. So, all right. So, with that, I'll call the question. All those in favor of the resolution as amended, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed?
Abstain.
And one abstention. Yep. Great. All right. That's unanimous with one abstention. Thanks, everyone. And now a break from housing. Resolution number 134, supporting freedom of choice in relation to COVID-19 shots. Can I have a motion to discuss?
Moved by
Legislator Petit. Can I have a second? Second from, I think I saw Deputy Chair Lopez on the second. And I will, we have one of the authors of the legislation, and I will defer to Legislator Hewitt to give us some background.
Wonderful. I'm not sure where to start, but I think I'll dive into the golden rule. He who holds the gold makes the rules.
Could we make that gender neutral?
No, actually, the reason I did that, I did some research before this. I looked at all of the owners of Moderna, Pfizer, United Health Group, CareMount, Optum. I looked at Optum bought CareMount. United Health Group owns Optum, and they also bought Riverside and Pro Health Medical Group in 2022 after they made billions on the vaccine, and now a pharmaceutical company owns CareMount. Every single CEO, Kathy, is a white man.
Hmm.
So I intentionally left he who holds the gold makes the rules. The other way I might start my speech on the floor is about my friend, my best friend for life, who was since college. But growing up, he was a punk, and this is going into something I don't want to do. I don't want to get into the science of this. I want to talk about choice. I want to talk about big money. Big Pharma made hundreds of billions of dollars in the last 3 years, and now they're trying to tell us what to do with our bodies, and choice is being threatened throughout America, and that's one of the whereases. I think I can address what legislator Erna brought up to me. This choice doesn't affect the choice to, you know, have a baby or not doesn't affect other people's health. But our choice to drive a car every day, if you own a car and you're privileged to own a car, kills a million people every year. So I think that that's the choice I will also focus on.
Any questions, comments, points of discussion from the committee? We'll go to legislator Nolan and then Petit.
Yeah, so there are several things that trouble me about this resolution. I'm a very strong proponent of autonomy and made my early career in medical ethics. So I am very supportive of individual choice. But it troubles me that this resolution addresses COVID-19 immunizations as a special case. And I'm not sure that there is, I don't see included in the background for the resolution why we do that and what the implications would be for the language here in terms of other immunizations. I find a lot of the language in the resolution to be what I would call advocacy language, in that I don't think it's relevant to what we do in terms of addressing the use of immunizations, the profits of the companies that make them. I think it's important, and it's a societal issue that needs to be addressed. But for me, if it just doesn't track one-to-one with the question of whether or not we should be mandating an immunization. And if we don't, as I think we don't, mandate immunizations in general, but instead have requirements for immunization for certain kinds of group activities, social activities, then I think we definitely get away from the language of the profits of the companies. So I think that there is language in here that I can endorse, especially as it is parallel to freedoms for individuals to choose what to do with their own bodies, which is very relevant to women choosing what they do with their own bodies. But I think that we should be very careful and get together and work as a committee before we take any action that either mandates that immunizations be given or that forbids there to be such mandates. To me, it goes into the realm of public health and medicine, and there may be situations, but I would like to see them in Ulster County or someplace relevant to Ulster County, that somebody is being harmed by a specific policy and then craft our solution based on that set of harms.
Legislator Petit.
Thank you. I had a discussion with a school principal who said these kids are required to get so many vaccinations before school starts. Sometimes they're up to 5 or 6 at each doctor's appointment and didn't think it was healthy. But with that, I mean, we're discussing immunization. This does not make you immune. I had my vaccines, my booster. I still got COVID. It almost creates a false sense of security. You know, if someone's sick, they should put a mask on. I'm a firm believer of that. But I also don't feel that we should be putting things into our body that, you know, generally these, you know, real vaccinations were created over periods of 10, 15, 20 years. This came out, thank goodness. I mean, I still don't know if it really helped or hurt us. Because when you go into a room, you know, and this is a choice. I don't know if I feel the same way about a shot that is like a flu shot. Are we then opening up the door to start mandating flu shots and mandating shingle shots and mandating, you know, pneumonia? And this is... This, I think, was geared more towards the governor trying to make a decision about the kids,
yeah,
more so than us, because it did fail in the federal courts. They said it was unconstitutional for employers to mandate their employees got these shots.
Legislator Lopez.
I think this doesn't address the elephant, which is us. It's the lawmakers as well. Because if you don't address the lawmakers as part of this, as part of the bigger picture, look, it's not the pharmaceutical companies that are enabling mandates. It's the pharmaceutical companies that have the highest power, highest paid lobbyists that are filling the coffers of our lawmakers. They get elected and they do the bidding of the pharmaceutical companies. So if you don't include the lawmakers who are actually creating the policies that create the mandates, then you're never going to stop this until you get money out of politics. So I think to weigh heavily on just the pharmaceutical company is not to address the bigger picture. And that's, you know, shame on the lawmakers for enabling, you know, the pharmaceutical companies to make the money that they have with very little repercussions.
So if I may, I'll share my comment, and then I would like to give an opportunity, since we do have our Commissioner of Health here, I would be curious to hear from her. If you want, you can decline if you want, but I will just say this. I will not be supporting this legislation. If it makes it to the floor, I'll be speaking in opposition of this legislation. This is singling out a specific vaccine, you know, when we're talking about macro problems, and this vaccine and the narrative around this vaccine has been exploited by folks that thrive on misinformation. We heard misinformation last week in the legislature. Some of the things we heard may have been true. A lot of them were not. And, you know, no one is going door to door and sticking a vaccine in people's needles that, you know, just forcing them to do it, locking them up and forcing them to do it. A lot of the mandates, in fact, I believe all of them, give you the option to test, which is in some ways more effective than the vaccine, right, because that actually keeps people from coming in. So I don't know why that is. I mean, I understand why it's mentioned here, but it sounds like we're opposing the very critical testing infrastructure that I believe saved lots of lives, as I believe the vaccine did as well. If you don't want to go to a school or send your kids to a school that requires these types of testing, there are other schools. There are certain communities that have their own schools. They also have polio. All right? We don't have polio anymore, but they do. All right? So I find this to be very divisive, and I'm going to be opposed to it in every iteration. Yep. Legislator Stewart.
I was just going to say that I have some issues with the legislation, too, because basically I think that public health is within the government's purview, and I think that we need to look out for the health of our citizens and our constituents. And I sort of want to echo some of what the chair just said about the misinformation that was presented, not only for the last 3 years, but also session last time, which I found to be completely infuriating, personally. My husband is a doctor, and I know what he would think. And it pains me to say that I can't support this as it is. But, yeah, this is something that I can't sign on to in its current form.
I'm curious. Commissioner Smith, would you like to share anything on this topic as the leading public health...
I think you said it very well, Chairperson Bouchetel. Really, it is somewhat divisive, for sure. I think it may speak to misinformation. I think that, you know, we really need to take the divisive politics out of public health and really look at it from the standpoint of the science, and weighing the pros and cons of what we do or we don't do in order to protect the health of the majority. The greatest good is really, I think, part of the public health mission. And there may be differences in opinion on an individual level, and I don't have the resolution in front of me, so I can't really speak to the details of it. But in general, vaccination has been the greatest health benefit of the last century, and I think that's proven over and over again. And, you know, but beyond that, I think public health needs to really be in the realm of the scientists and the physicians and patient-doctor relationships. So I would really not like to see it politicized or really made an issue in terms of any kind of a divisive argument in this forum without substantial documentation and other discussion.
Thank you. Legislator Hewitt, and then Petit.
Thank you. Would you like to go first, Mayor and Committee?
No, I just want to remind everyone that this is not a vaccine. It's not a permanent cure. It is a mutating virus. And I guess I would challenge it if everybody's a yes on this. You know, then we as legislators should also be walking the talk, and everyone here should be required to have all of their shots, too. So, you know, because you can't mandate one group of folks and not do it. It's like the golden insurance policy when they passed Obamacare.
I still have Legislator Hewitt. If you want to speak now, or if you want to defer to Legislator Nolan, I'm happy to accommodate that as well, but I don't want you to get lost.
I think just to clarify, my understanding, and I haven't looked up vaccine in a while, but my understanding is a vaccine does not incorporate the notion of permanent immunity. A vaccine is a use of a substance to stimulate the immune system to a response that would be possibly or likely to be protected. And so, you know, what this bringing forward with this resolution does is open up discussions so that we can share information, so I'm glad for that. But I think the understanding of what a vaccine is and is intended to do is really part of the question here. And I think that it's also, I don't think we have instances that I'm aware of somebody forcing vaccines. And maybe I'm just missing the group that is, you know, concerned here. But I think that in Ulster County we have worked our way through the pandemic, and I haven't heard reports of groups that felt that they were forced to be vaccinated in ways that were oppressive. And I think we also made huge efforts to make vaccines available to those who wanted them voluntarily, and that did in fact save lives.
I have some constituents who can't find schools for their children because of what happened after the measles outbreak. When Executive Ryan came to the town of Rochester and told our town board about the measles outbreak, Councilwoman Beehoven DePue said, "When are you going to do something when we all start dying?" And I said, "Bee, adults don't get measles." So this fear of death is driving the narrative often. And then I said, "How many cases are in New York State?" He said, "So far, two." And that was the outbreak that led to the K-12 requirements and the removal of religious exemption. And so that fear led through to the removal of religious exemption that now is not allowing our children to get into school. I can give plenty of examples. But my point was, I don't want the resolution to be divisive. I think it can definitely be improved, and it's about all shots and immunizations for me. And finally, I agree with Dr. Smith about public health being so important, which is why the Hippocratic Oath is so important. First, do no harm. But when first you have to make profits, you can't follow the Hippocratic Oath.
There, no one.
And just another clarification, I'm not aware of anything that would limit measles so that it's not contracted by adults. The reason that most adults do not get measles is that they were immunized or had native measles as children, and so they have either natural or acquired immunity. But if you take unvaccinated adults and expose them to measles, my understanding is they'll get measles. So, again, we have to start from a base of there are things that I think in medicine are pretty well established, things that are put forward that are not as well established, and things that are not understood. And so I think that we can, to me this is another instance where the notion of having a resolution about a topic is good, because I think there's something to be addressed and we share information. But to have it come in a fully formed resolution means that an individual kind of, or a small group of individuals, thought it through and came up with a solution. And I do think there are some instances when committees can share information and lead to a better framing of the issue. Should we be talking about all immunizations? And that's tough, because there's a lot of diversity in their efficacy, in their side effects and possible side effects. If we're not talking about all immunizations, then how do we justify talking about one or the other? So a very complicated realm, and I think we should work to look at the problems that we have in Ulster County and see what specific remedies are needed, including, you know, making sure that appropriate schooling opportunities are available to children whose families have particular beliefs. As a bioethicist and a pediatrician, I have gone to Albany Medical School and given a lecture to pediatric residents about how they can and how they should respect parental assertions of autonomy around immunizations, instead of just flatly, you know, slamming down a mandate or, you know, saying things that are not true, like your particular child will die of measles if that child is not vaccinated. Often not true at all because of herd immunity. But there are ways to hold those conversations that I think we should be encouraging. And I think that your points about profit motive making those conversations harder or not happening is very well taken. So I'm not sure what the right forum is for moving forward with this, but I appreciate the intent of the resolution, but couldn't support it as it is.
So with that, do we want to, I mean, I'm inclined to call the question on this, unless anyone has anything further to say.
Well, would the sponsor want to postpone or withdraw and maybe come back again with a different version rather than have a vote from us on it?
I think it could be improved. Would that mean waiting a month?
I'd be happy to make a motion to postpone if you think you can improve this and,
mm-hmm.
and bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's a hard task to do in a month.
Yeah.
But if you want that, I think I don't have any trouble discussing it again in a month and seeing if you've been able to address some of our concerns.
Works for me.
And make a motion we postpone for a month.
There's a second. Second from earlier. All those in favor of the postponement?
Aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? I'll be opposed to the postponement. Right. Now we have a bunch of resolutions for appointments to the Community Services Board. And before we get into these, I want to say I spoke with Legislator Nolan earlier. This was mentioned briefly, but in light of the
rulings that we've been getting from the ethics board and concerns about conflict of interest and the way that we feel they're interpreting the ethics law, Legislator Nolan has been advised to recuse just because they work with some of the folks that are, they were in their volunteer work, they work with some of the folks that are listed here. I personally don't think that that should be a conflict, but our counsel has advised that in light of these, in light of what the ethics board has been providing us, it is a concern. I don't know if you want to add anything to that. It might even be best not to. I don't really know, honestly, with the ethics board today.
I think you stated it well. Thank you.
So I'll say this. I want to block these because the meeting is getting long. And technically we have another meeting in here in 10 minutes. So I'm going to block them, and I'm going to ask for a resolution to block them in two groups. And one will have Legislator Nolan abstaining. Does anyone, before I do that, does anyone have any issues with any of the particular appointments that are happening here? Okay. So with that, I will entertain a motion to block Resolution 135, 137 through 142. So that's 135 and then 137 through 142. Moved by Legislator Lopez, and have a second.
Second that, right?
That's you can.
Those are my. Those
better not.
Mine.
Oh no, that's the one that's not you. Yes. Okay, so yeah, so you can second that. All in favor of the block, of the act of blocking these?
Aye.
All right. Any discussion on the blocked resolutions? Yep.
Which one has David McNamara? Because he is on.
He's one of the ones that there's three people
block.
That are involved with Somadi that
okay.
are the ones that are on the next block.
And that's the next block. Okay,
next
so I'll close the question then.
Okay,
thank you.
Great. Any other discussion on this set of blocked resolutions? This is 135 and then 137 through 142. All right, if there's no further, I'll call the question on the blocked resolutions 135 and the resolutions from 137 through 142. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, those are unanimous.
Oh,
I will
wait,
now
you're good.
Entertain a motion to block Resolution 136, Resolution 143, and Resolution 144. All right, moved by Lopez, second by Petit. So I'll call the question on the block. All those in favor on the act of blocking these three?
Aye.
Any opposed?
Abstain.
One abstention. All right, so discussion on the three blocked resolutions. Legislator Petit.
I mean, it's hard to find volunteers, for sure, especially qualified volunteers. But if one is also a contractual organization or on that, wouldn't they need to recuse themselves from much of the discussion as well? And I'm not sure about Helen Cano. The name's familiar, but I can't place.
Yep. Commissioner, or Director McDonald.
Thank you.
We spent a lot of time and conversation on this prior to my coming on board as deputy. There was always an understanding that contractors were not allowed to be a part of the community services board because at one point we were in dire straits around having qualified volunteers be a part of the board. The question then went to our council and it went to the state with regards to any prohibition that there may be for contractors to be a part of the board. Across the state, there are many, especially some of our neighbors in Orange and in Sullivan counties, where they are indeed contractors. And based on the council that we got back, there is no prohibition. So he would be allowed to participate in any way.
Thank you.
He couldn't be a part of our RFP for something that he was going for, but in terms of discussion and hearings, the public conversation about our system, they would be allowed as contractors to hear them.
Any other questions pertaining to these three resolutions? All right, with that, I'll call the question on the block of resolutions, on the blocked resolutions, 136, 143, and 144. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, those three.
And
one abstaining.
Abstain, and I should probably state a reason for my abstention. I'm reluctant to state purposes of employment since I'm not paid by the organization at question here, but I would state that I cannot with confidence anticipate how the current ethics committee would view a vote.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so I'm actually abstaining on the basis of unwillingness to incur consequences of the vote without understanding the principle that would guide those consequences.
And I'll just add that this is not a sustainable situation with the ethics board.
Yeah,
so and there's already work being done to figure out how we're going to make these, whatever we need to do to allow legislators to vote. All right, with that, we are moving on. We are at Resolution 157, amending the Ulster County 2023 budget to allow for the implementation of the plus one accessory dwelling unit ADU program with funding provided by the New York State Housing Trust Fund Corporation, existing as a subsidiary of New York State Housing Finance Agency through the Department of Planning. Can I have a motion to discuss? Moved by Pasheet, second by Erner.
And I'm sorry, what number are we on?
We are on 157. So we just did all those community services, and now we're on to 157.
If I move to block that with the next one?
We can do that. Yeah, we can do that. Technically, when you block a resolution, it's only two blocks. When there's two resolutions in a block, you actually end up voting the same number of times. So two
I'll withdraw
threshold.
That.
It's okay, all right.
I don't know.
Did you just block his motion to block?
I didn't know. I defer to the will of the committee. I defer to the committee to
another place.
I defer to the will of the committee. And so, in any event, I would like to give an opportunity for Director Doyle to share a very brief background on this program.
Sure. Thank you, Chair. This is a revenue contract from the state. It is a pilot program at the state level for building accessory dwelling units. We applied in joint with the City of Kingston and RUPCO. RUPCO actually was eligible to apply by itself. So what ends up happening here is they're literally providing funding to build accessory dwelling units for low and moderate income homeowners. And then those dwelling units need to be remained affordable at below 80% of the AMI for the duration, and the tenants will be into leases for those. But the main thing is the homeowner itself has to be affordable. We're also working with the City of Kingston, and we're going to do the city is working to do a design competition for some of these ADUs. We hope to roll the program out as soon as possible.
Thank you. Any questions for Director Doyle?
I just think it's awesome.
I think it is, yeah.
Legislator Erner.
So we just heard the word affordable housing, and this committee just passed the affordable housing law. So I'm wondering if we'll need to be thinking about what that means with respect to our new county law that is going to go to the floor and hopefully become the law. Or if this doesn't really interact with that for some reason or other.
Well, the law is not intended to restrict our ability, and it says in the law that it's not to be interpreted as restricting our ability to address other housing issues. Yeah, it's additive, not restrictive. It doesn't create exclusions. Would that be fair to say?
Yeah, and the reference in the law in terms of affordability is defined by any state and federal program would also protect you as well.
Correct. Yeah, so both halves of that clause would be in place here.
Thank you.
All right, so I'm going to start moving through these a little bit more quickly since we're getting late here. So I'm going to call the question. If there's no further discussion on 157, all those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, 157 is unanimous. Resolution number 158, approving the execution of a contract for $1.75 million entered into by the county with the Housing Trust Fund Corporation Department of Planning. Can I have a motion to discuss?
I'll move it.
Motion by Nolan. Can I have a second? Second by Erner. Any discussion on this? This is the funding. This is the contract for the prior resolution. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? It's unanimous. Resolution number 163, amending the 2023 Ulster County budget to reflect the increase in cost associated with forensic pathology services provided by Westchester Medical Center and morgue storage services provided by Health Alliance Hospital. Can I have a motion to discuss?
I'll move it.
Moved by Nolan. Can I have a second? Second by Petit. I do want to defer to, I want to request Commissioner Smith to share with us here. There have been some challenges, from what I understand, with forensic pathology, and this is something that is going to perhaps come up in the months ahead and in the budget next year. So I do think it's very important for all of us on this committee to understand what's going on with forensic pathology in the county. Commissioner Smith.
Yeah, well, there's a very severe shortage of forensic pathologists across the country, so that's a given. But about 6 years ago, the county, having to decide how best to provide for forensic pathology services for unattended deaths, decedents who may have succumbed to homicide, suicide, or other unbeknownst reasons but found dead in a given place in the county. It's a New York State law that the county provide for medical examiner services and to provide for having an autopsy done on those different decedent categories that are described in New York State law. So Westchester Medical Center and the county entered into an agreement about 6 years ago to provide for forensic pathology services and to also, in a separate contract, provide for use of the morgue, which is really the only morgue facility in the county, which is housed in Health Alliance. That contract was providing services for 6 years. It came to the end of the contract period, and we were working with Westchester to renew that contract. When they presented the renewed contract to us, it was for a greater amount of money than we anticipated in the budget initially, but again, there were no cost increases over the span of that 6 years, so we were anticipating that it would be more money in order to provide this service. And Tom Gibney is with me, he's the Deputy Director for Administration, he's also our lead fiscal person in our fiscal unit. When we looked at it, the amount that it was in excess of was about $100,000. So, in any event, the Westchester Medical Center has continued to provide the forensic pathology services despite the fact that the contract did expire. And when we asked them for the renewal, we did see that increased amount in the contract. Is this the best option for providing for this mandated service under New York State law? 6 years ago, we decided it was the best option. Over the course of 6 years, those services were provided. And once again, it is the best option for us to proceed along these lines. So, hence, we're at this point.
Any questions from
We had about 200 autopsies over the span of 2022. That were provided through this forensic pathology services. And year to date, from January until about now, we've had 53 of them. And really, the alternatives are, when we looked at the alternatives from a fiscal standpoint as well as a logistical standpoint, really this was definitely the best option that is in front of us at this point.
Thank you. Any questions for Commissioner? Yep, Legislator Lopez.
In this contract, do they provide a backup?
They do. They provide backup, and part of the contract is to provide for what's technically called a deaner, which basically is an assistant to the pathologist in order to maneuver the body and whatnot to get the specimen.
Yep, Legislator Erner.
Thank you. Commissioner Smith, do you know if this had been done at the Broadway campus before or if it's been at Mary's Avenue for some time?
No, it's the only morgue that's really used at this point in time and has been since decades is the morgue at the Kingston Hospital, which is still being used.
Okay. Oh, I see. It's still on Broadway. Okay. And do we know if this salary, or if this $468,000 per year for the pathologist, if that's their salary, or do we have any idea how that breaks
down? It's a mix. It's salary plus the cost of having the pathologist back up in the event that the primary pathologist is away or on vacation or otherwise indisposed. We did have a situation this year where the primary pathologist went out on extended medical leave and the Westchester had to provide for the backup coverage. Which they did do, so we did have the actual example of how that would work, provide, you know, in the event that the primary pathologist wasn't available. So they are still looking for a primary pathologist, but they have provided the services through another pathologist on an interim basis, and they are doing as they told us, a nationwide search to look for a replacement. Just conducting that search with that sort of, you know, company that does that particular kind of work is very expensive. So I know they're absorbing that cost of finding for a more permanent pathologist for us, but there's been no significant lapse in terms of coverage. And of course, you know, these are time-sensitive procedures. We cannot let a family wait 1 week, 2 weeks to have an autopsy done on their loved one who may have succumbed to suicide, homicide, or some other event that was not
Any other questions? Otherwise, I'll call the question on 163. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
I'm going to be a no for now, just because of a weekend experience again with, I mean, these people make so much money, and I feel like we're the cash cow for them. I'll think about it. I understand it has nothing related with other programs, but...
Pathologists, because there's so few of our between, it's literally... They can tell whomever what they're going to
charge. What they're
going to
be making, yeah.
They can name their salary, because they are a rare professional group.
All right, on to Resolution 164, approving the execution of a contract for rates anticipated to exceed $50,000 instituted by the county with Westchester Healthcare Corporation, doing business as Westchester Medical Center, Health Alliance Hospital, Mary's Avenue Campus, Department of Health. Can I have a motion to discuss? Moved by Nolan. Can I have a second? Second by Erner. And this is the contract for the prior resolution. If there's nothing else to say about it, then we could simply call the question on it, unless anyone else has anything to say. I see no hands. I will call the question on Resolution 164. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? That is unanimous. Resolution
I think
we've got one opposed. Sorry.
Yeah,
thank you.
I'm a protest now until later on.
Thank you. All right. 166, amending the 2023 Ulster County budget to accept additional funding from the New York State Office of Mental Health for a 2.5% cost of living adjustment for eligible programs and for a stipend increase for supportive housing beds. Can I have a motion to discuss?
I move it.
Moved by Nolan. Can I have a second? Second by Petit. And this is a COLA increase. I don't know that there needs to be much discussion. We're getting the funding for it. Any questions, comments, or concerns? With that, I will call the question on 166. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that is unanimous. That actually is unanimous. Resolution 167, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $81,252 entered into by the county with Gateway Community Industries, Department of Mental Health. Can I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
May I have a second? So moved by Nolan, second by Petit.
Awesome.
Great.
Hello.
You've been volunteered seconded. Any questions, comments, or discussion on this? This is 99% state. We've got 1% skin in the game. Any comments from anyone on the committee? Any questions for Commissioner Health, Commissioner of Mental Health? All right. I'll call the question on Resolution 167. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? And it's unanimous. Resolution number 168, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $32,880, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000 entered by the county with People Projects to Empower and Organize a Psychiatrically Labeled Incorporated Department of Mental Health. Can I have a motion to discuss?
I'll move it.
Can I have a second?
I'll second.
All right, moved by Nolan, second by Petit.
Quick question. Is this a different name for People USA, or is it a different group?
No, it's a different name for People USA.
Thank you. I thought so.
Great. And this is slightly more skin in the game for the county. This is 3% versus the 1% of the last one. Any questions, comments, or concerns? I'll call the question on 168. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that one is unanimous. 169, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $49,320, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, transmitted by the county, with Rehabilitation Support Services, Inc., with Department of Mental Health. I have a motion to discuss.
I'll move it.
And a second?
Second by Corcoran. This is 100% state funded. If anyone has any questions, comments, or concerns, we have the commissioner here. We can ask or discuss. But if there are no further questions, I will call the question on 169. All those in favor?
Aye.
All those opposed? One opposed. Legislator Petit. Resolution number 170, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $80,145 engineered by the County Mental Health Association in Ulster County, Inc., Department of Mental Health. Can I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
Moved by Stewart, second by Nolan. Any questions, comments, or concerns? This one's 96-4. This deal is getting worse as we go on. 99, then 97, now 96. I'm being facetious, of course. Any questions, comments, or concerns? Yeah, I know.
It's still a good deal.
It's still a good deal. As Tara said, it's going to get worse in a moment. all right, all those in favor? Any opposed?
Aye.
All right, that one's unanimous. Resolution 171, approving the execution of a contract for $1,241,021 entered into by the county with People Projects to empower and organize a psychiatrically labeled Inc. Department of Mental Health. Can I have a motion to discuss?
I am happy to move it.
And a second?
I'll second.
Second by Petite. All right, so this one is a big county contract.
Yeah.
And I do want to give Commissioner McDonald a moment to give us, if there's a 90-second version, please.
It's our Crisis Stabilization Center that we're all very excited about. We actually had a call today with OMH and OASF to start the licensing process, which would mean that we would stay on track, if possible, for an opening later in the year.
Great. Anyone on the committee with questions? Yep. Legislator Petit.
This is 171.
This is 171.
Okay. But it says that we're entering into an agreement with People. I thought that the Stabilization Center was going to be run by the county and create county jobs, not be passed through to an organization that we kind of lose. I mean, because we had a great mental health department. And I've spoken to retired, I've spoken to people who went through all of their programs. I really do not want to kind of farm it out to other vendors. So as much as I am in favor of it, I would like to see this a county department.
I'm not sure if I should respond, but
you
I
can go, you're welcome to.
I will respond by saying that this was an RFP that we put out last year with the understanding that it would be a contractor that would come on. We would give the resource as the space, and we would help with operational costs until they would be up and able to bill. So that was a process that was set in motion.
Yeah. So it's a $1.2 million contract, but we pay for everything, including the service.
We pay for it until they're able to bill.
Yeah.
And so the amount that we will be supporting will decrease as the years move along, and they should be sustainable through continued bill.
Yeah, Legislator Nolan.
Yeah, I think just to address Legislator Petit's concern, if we, along the way, decide that we are not happy with what is happening there, we could continue to fund that with county money and move that away from the process that we put in motion. But this is a very specialized area of service, and I think having consultants who are equipped to do this is really, this is a realm where I feel very comfortable having a contractual relationship for these kinds of services. And I think that it being in a county-owned facility, we now own that building, will give us other options for oversight as well, opportunities for oversight. So I understand the impulse,
yeah.
But I think that in order to stand this up and have it working in this time frame, this was the option. Other options could emerge later.
And they are overseeing the Dutchess County Stabilization Center, correct? Isn't
this
the
stabilization?
The license will be in
there. Crap.
And I will point out, and I'm very happy about this, I was going to point this out anyway, that the contract has a beautiful chart that says exactly how much the staff are getting paid.
and I'm very happy about that, and I'd like you to pass that along to the county executives too. Yeah, especially Joanna when she gets back. You can tell her how stoked I am.
Message
her after. Yeah, stoked. The itemized staff plan caused much stoke by the chair.
It's a rather industrial metaphor, but
you know. Anyway,
sorry.
Any further questions or discussion? With that, I'll call the question on Resolution 171. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed?
All right. And I'll be a yes on it. Only, I mean, they're doing a great job there, but we set up this mental health department specifically so we could build it back up and not just be a pass-through for vendors. And I would really like to see it get to that point where, again, it's a shining example of where we should be as a county, and not leave it, I mean, yeah, hire a vendor anywhere.
Thank you. All right, Resolution number 172, amending the 2023 Ulster County budget to accept an allocation of funds from the New York State Office for Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance to support activities associated with sheltering the homeless during inclement winter weather. This is the Code Blue plan through the Department of Social Services. Can I have a motion to discuss?
I'll move it.
May I have a second?
Second.
All right. So that was seconded by Stuart. All right. And this is, I mean, this is the same thing, I assume, Mike, that we get every year. Are there any notable changes?
No, I mean, I would just point out that the amount may seem excessive. It's because we submitted a plan for 22-23 that contemplated a warming center in Ellenville. Unfortunately, we were not able to arrive at locating a site, but the plan that we submitted was approved, so that's encouraging to know that the funds would have been available, and we do have to accept the allocation, and then we claim against it for as much as we've expended. And we'll continue with our 23-24 plan to anticipate citing a location in Ellenville.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, Legislator Petit.
Does the warming center stay open 24 hours if the temperatures drop below 32? Say you have a day where it's only 11 degrees outside all day.
Yes,
and
day and evening activation based on the temperature.
Day and evening. So they could potentially be there for 24 hours if it was really cold. Okay. And cooling centers?
Cooling centers are not contemplated under the Code Blue plan, but we've made provisions for that.
Thank you.
The warming center location through Catholic Charities and Secondary Iglesia.
Okay. Perfect. Thank you.
Yep, Legislator Erner.
Thank you. in the contract to this, in the application to the state, we say with contract with Family Woodstock to cover the cost of placing clients with families who cannot be placed at the warming center motels. My question is, who determines that they can or cannot be placed at the warming center?
We don't mix single adults with families. So families are not permitted to be in the warming center with adults.
Oh, you were explaining that. You weren't saying it's... Okay, I understand now. Thank you.
Okay.
Yeah, and it says placing clients with families.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
thanks for bringing that up.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Any questions or comments or discussion on this? Otherwise, I'll call the question on Resolution 172. All right. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. 172 is unanimous. Resolution number 173, authorizing the chair of the Ulster County Legislature to execute an intermunicipal agreement with the town of Saugerties to provide services of a domestic violence investigator to the Ulster County Family and Child Advocacy Center Department of Social Services. Can I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
And a second?
I'll second.
Moved by Nolan, second by Petit.
I feel like we just did this, didn't we?
We do IPV stuff a lot.
Yeah.
Or actually, well, no, we did. You know what it was? We did IPV a few months ago, different. This is different services. And Mike, if there's anything that you want to just share very, very briefly on.
Very briefly, it may look familiar to you. We do this annually because our Family and Child Advocacy Center has investigatory teams that consist of a law enforcement officer and a child protective services caseworker. And in the 29-year history of the FDAC, we have always had agreements with municipal law enforcement departments who can make law enforcement officers available. And this is basically consistent with that same policy that we've had in place all this time.
Great.
Any further questions? Yep, Legislator Erner?
I'm not sure who can answer this, but maybe our clerk or deputy clerk. I was surprised because of that law enforcement connection, this isn't going to that committee. Is there, do we have any notion about that?
It's a contract with the Department of Social Services, so the health committee has purview over contracts for that, not the law enforcement committee. And we try to keep them specific to their purview approval. Otherwise, they would be almost subjective arguments that anything could be related to housing. Maybe that is in economic development, but it's a contract under planning department. We do try to put some of them where, but we try to keep them in their committee lane.
Technically, our law on housing that we advanced tonight draws from a comptroller's opinion associating housing with a fulfillment of our police responsibilities, technically.
I saw that.
Yeah.
Thanks
and
for
it's
explanation.
A law and could have been in laws and rules.
Mm-hmm.
It will be, I believe, right? Yeah. So, in any event, does that answer your question, Legislator Erner? Are you is that satisfactory?
Yes, thank you.
Great. My only question on this one, I believe, is just prior iterations included Ellenville, is that right?
We've had Ellenville, New Paltz, Saugerty, Kingston.
But this one's just Saugerty.
This is just Saugerty.
Okay, are the other ones proceeding as well, or is that?
Currently, this is the only contract that we have in place with the municipality. The Ulster County Sheriff's Department has allocated one officer, and we have two officers from the New York State Police. We're in conversation with possibly getting an officer from New Paltz, and we have those conversations normally about a year in advance so that they can decide whether they can participate in the agreement.
Great, thank you. Legislator Petit, do you...
Do they also provide a room that's kid-friendly for these interviews? I know that sounds bizarre, but
bizarre
you don't want to bring
a
kid
yes,
to a police.
Yes, we do. We have
a
state-of-the-art facility that has interview booths specifically designed to provide
to
the
make
maximum
it, make them more comfortable.
For,
okay,
for
thank you.
Children.
All right. With that, I will call the question on 173. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. That one's unanimous. 174, approving the execution of a contract amendment for $1,200, causing the aggregate contract plus amendment amount to be in excess of $50,000, entering into the county with Nicholas Kamen through the Department of Social Services. Can I have a motion to discuss?
So moved.
All right, moved by Stewart and second by Petit. This is 100% state funded, increased funding for behavioral health clinician services. Are there any questions that the committee has? Comments, discussion? All right, then I will call the question on 174. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, that one's unanimous. 132 was withdrawn by its sponsor, so it was on our agenda, but we don't need to do anything with it.
Okay.
120, I'm not asking for any action on, and I am considering withdrawing it prior to our next meeting around good cause eviction. It's not been going great in the courts for lower municipalities on this. And who knows, by the next meeting, we might have a budget from the state that includes it. Or we might have some other progress, or hopefully we'll have a budget from the state, just in general.
We need to buy a backhoe and start building the stuff ourselves.
Right. Yeah. So with that, that is the end of our agenda. There is one more topic, if you guys could just hold on for 1 second. So this was something that Legislator Erner suggested. It's actually something that I've been aware of because it happened while I was, I think we're all aware of it, but this happened, this incident happened when I was chair of law enforcement. So it's actually something I'm glad to still be able to follow up on. There was a police-involved death in Wawarsing that began as a mental health call. Last week, the body cam footage was released to the public. It is very heavy. I don't want to editorialize too much about what I saw in the video. Okay. But I did, because it is our mobile mental health that we're responding to this, and it's very important that we have this conversation about how we respond to mental health, because ultimately if you think about that incident, we want that incident to happen to be resolved in ways that are under the purview of the health committee, not to be resolved in the ways that are under the purview of the law enforcement committee. And so I wanted to ask Commissioner McDonald to give us a quick update on how mobile mental health is going and if there's anything that we are learning and able to change.
So I was asked specifically to speak to the idea of the 911 dispatcher.
Yes.
And that it leads into the idea of diverting folks from law enforcement interventions and for folks that are struggling with a behavioral health issue to get the most appropriate response. So we had a contract with that that supports the living that is a fully county contribution expansion, fully county contribution contract that included expanding hours and having a dispatcher sitting alongside our 911 dispatchers in the emergency services center. The idea and the intention of that was to be able to have that dispatcher who was a clinician and a part of the mobile mental health team helped the 911 dispatchers learn how to be able to divert for calls that for individuals that are suffering from a behavioral health challenge and not necessarily having to include law enforcement. The contract has been executed for about, I want to say this is our third cycle of recontracting with Access. Access has had an incredibly difficult time staffing this. When they're staffing or recruiting for a mobile mental health team member, they're having a hard time finding someone who would be willing to sit in the 911 center when they're looking for community-based clinical services. So it has been very, very difficult for them to be able to sustain staffing. And this has been an issue ongoing throughout the time of the contract. So right now, it has been reported correctly by Andrew from the 911 center that they usually only get to staff it two times out of the month with a particular per diem person, and the full-time remains a vacancy. So staffing was one issue that came up as a challenge. But then there's also a philosophical challenge. Because we had a limited amount of money, we wanted to start with a pilot, so the hours of the 911 dispatcher that's also a mobile mental health team member is from 12 to 8. It's very difficult for the 911 dispatchers to say, I have support on now, how would I use this workflow, versus I don't have support on now. So they were just doing whatever they would do on a consistent basis, and even when it was fully staffed, the clinician wasn't necessarily getting an opportunity to be able to advise on diversion. So there's been operational issues as well as staffing issues that have not made us really realize this to its fullest potential. However, there are some opportunities that are coming up with the continued rollout of 988 regionally. And that is a 24/7 response. So we're looking to be able to talk with our partners. The Dutchess County Helpline was tapped by OMH to be our regional call center. And so they are taking calls from Ulster County residents through 988. They get about 40 calls a month from Ulster County residents, and they are successfully getting them linked to services. Maybe it's the mobile mental health team that they're connecting them to, or they're connecting them to our offices for ongoing support. But there is also money that's available to help with continued diversion efforts. So we're looking at 988. It doesn't necessarily appear that Access will continue with this contract because they haven't been able to meet the deliverables.
Any quick questions for Commissioner McDonald, with the understanding that this is a much larger issue and a much longer conversation?
That's why we need a really big mental health department.
I agree. Legislator Erner?
Yeah, and thank you, Commissioner, for communicating with me earlier and coming to explain that. Can you just real quick tell us the difference between there's the 911 response you can get, there's the 988, and there's also the 844 mental health number?
Absolutely. So the 911 is, that's the number that's tried and true. Everyone knows if you're in need of help, you will call 911. Currently, there is a clinician that is, there's a position for a clinician to be there in order to help the dispatchers determine whether that call can be diverted. And if it was going to be diverted, it would be diverted directly to our mobile mental health team.
So even though they're calling 911 and they're expecting an ambulance and police or what have you, if we can make a clinical assessment that really the best response is to the team, we will divert them directly to the team. So that's 911. 988 is the national suicide hotline rollout that happened in July of last year. And either a county can have their call-in center or they can be connected to a national suicide hotline regional call center. There was a limited amount of times in terms of rollout for this. They really were under the gun as of July. So they said, you know, the State Office of Mental Health was responsible for the rollout. They leaned on some of the already established national suicide hotlines regionally, Dutchess County being one of them. They have an established helpline. Well over 40 years they've been taking these calls. They handle all of the calls for the bridges in our region as well. And so they asked them to handle the Ulster County calls. So you can call 988 if you are having an emotional issue, if you're, you know, struggling with some suicidal ideation, or if you just want to talk to somebody. And based on, again, their clinical assessment, because it's manned by clinicians 24 hours a day, based on their clinical assessment is where they determine this person should go. They could feel that they're a serious risk of harm for themselves, and they would contact our 911 and have, in order to be able to get a response from 911. The 844 number is the number directly to the Multiple Mental Health Team. So you call them, they talk you through it, either on the phone, they can make the decision that they want to come out to the community to see you. And that's only 10 to 10 Mondays, no, 10 to 10, 20, 10 to 10, 365 days a year.
Thank you so much. So if it's all right, I'd like us to wrap there. Any other questions? Commissioner McDonald, I'm sure, would be happy to answer them. So with that, I will entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Second.
All right, so it's moved by Stuart, second by Erner. All those in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right, thanks, everyone. I really appreciate hanging in there for this one.